Welcome to the Natural Super Kids podcast, where you will discover practical strategies to inspire you to boost the health and nutrition of your kids. I'm Jessica Donovan, a qualified naturopath specializing in kids' health, and I want to make it as easy as possible for you to raise healthy and happy kids. Let's get into it. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Natural Super Kids podcast. I am thrilled to introduce you to Kirsten Cobabe for a conversation about parenting teenagers today. Now, I've interviewed and had a chat with Kirsten before for a masterclass for our Natural Super Kids Club members. So if you're a member, you can head into the membership portal and watch that conversation, which is also about teen parenting. So today on the podcast, we're having a chat with Kirsten, and as I've shared quite a bit this year, you know, I'm in the thick of teen parenting. I have a 13 and 16 year old, and I am feeling out of my depth. Let's be honest, most days. So I feel like I got a personal coaching session with Kirsten in this conversation, and I asked her all of my burning questions about teenagers and teenage parenting. So let me tell you a bit about Kirsten. She is a family coach. She's definitely a teen whisperer. She specializes in supporting both teens and parents to navigate the waves of adolescence. Her intentional approach focuses on creating lasting connection through curiosity, presence, authenticity, and awareness. She has over 20 years' experience with families, and Kirsten supports parents in learning how to listen to and talk with their teens. She engages parents in personal reflection, embracing their new role, cultivating rapport, understanding the teen brain, transforming obstacles, and restoring harmony in the home. In recognizing this unique stage of development, Kirsten's mission is to bridge the widening gap between parents and their children, creating conscious and strong bonds. Through tailored strategies, compassionate guidance, and proven techniques, she empowers families to pilot these pivotal years with understanding and grace. Kirsten's work is not just about addressing immediate concerns, but about lighting the path to a more empowered future, ensuring that today's challenges become the foundation for tomorrow's brighter relationships. She really, you know, is a breath of fresh air in this space. For me, she reminds me that what we are going through as a family with two teenage kids is completely normal. And so I love that about her. You must follow Kirsten on Instagram over at Kirsten Cobabe. Her surname is spelt C-O-B-A-B-E. I will make sure the link is in the show notes, because her Instagram posts always show up for me at the perfect time and, you know, reassure me and give me some really practical tools that I can use to strengthen my relationship with my own teenagers. I know you're going to love this conversation. Here's Kirsten. Hello, Kirsten. It's so exciting to talk to you again.
I'm so happy to be here with you again.
So let's dive in, and I'd love for you to share your wisdom. I know this is a big question, but I'd love your thoughts on what parents need to know when it comes to teenagers.
So many things, of course. I think what comes to heart right now is that actually they really do care about what you think of them, and they actually do want to hang out with you, but they don't want is to be nagged. And what they don't want is to have that transactional feeling relationship. They really want to be seen and witnessed, like we all do, right?
Yes, I love that. And, you know, I'm a mum of two teens, and I must admit I'm feeling out of my depth in a lot of days. So, you know, speaking from experience, teens can often be resistant. I'm definitely feeling a lot of resistance from my 16-year-old at the moment, you know, especially when we're asking them to do something. Can you explain why and how you know, why this happens and how we can improve this dynamic.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's an important part of this stage, actually, and it serves a really essential purpose. So part of it's their budding autonomy, right? It's sort of like the toddler years, just bigger, and the stakes are a little higher because they're maybe driving and these sorts of things. So recognizing, though, that no is really important. It's not because they're disrespectful and want to disobey. It's because there's a part of them inside that's really becoming, it's growing, right? Mm-hmm. That inner autonomy, that autonomy is budding and blooming. And we can also look to counter will, which is another part of all humans, but this stage particularly, which is really about, if I sense an agenda, I'm not down with it. And this is a really important, beautiful, almost like sixth sense that we want them to have and to keep. We wouldn't want them to just be blindly obedient to anything or anyone at any time. And so these are really important parts of the stage and age when we can see that that's what's happening, that it's not personal, it's developmental. And I think it can be really tricky because most parents are sleep deprived, stressed out. Also, your one's child often feels like a reflection of it, whether your parenting is good or bad. And it's like, I mean, obviously there's a connection between you two because it's a dynamic and a dance, but it's not necessarily an accurate reflection of whether you're parenting good or bad, because there are these developmental stages and lampposts along the way. So you can actually kind of be there by their side when you remember that it's not personal. They're not trying to be disrespectful. They're actually sleep deprived and stressed out too.
Yeah, such good points. And I was catching up with a friend with older children in their 20s a few weeks ago. And I'm like, oh, help. Like, I need some tips on the teenage years. And she said, my biggest tip is do not take anything personally. And you've just reiterated that.
That's it. It is. It's totally developmental. And if any part of us does want to, says it feels like there's something there, and maybe it's not personal, but it's like, oh, I wonder why that bothers me. Mm. Beautiful. That's a beautiful wonder, because there might be some magic in that trigger. But I always say, like, there's a treasure in the trigger.
Yes, I love that. And getting curious, right, rather than kind of, like that blaming. And I so relate to, you know, they're like toddlers but only bigger. And I think as parents that can make it trickier. Like, we're in the process of moving house at the moment. And in one of my bad moments, I said to my 16-year-old, I'm like, I think you were more helpful when you were three, mate. you know, because we expect more from them because they are bigger. I mean, he's bigger than me, but they are, you know, it is similar to the toddler years in so many ways, isn't it?
It really is. And they actually might have been more helpful at three, because at three, they're like, mommy, like, what are you doing? I want to be with you all the time. But when they're 13, 14, 15, 16, they're not that, it's not that same energy. When I say they still want to be with you, it's not in the same way as when they're three. It's completely different. It's quality over quantity. They want to complain and talk to you about their life. They just need to know it's going to be received rather than shut down.
Yes. Yes. Oh, that's so good. So lecturing our teens, again, I can speak from experience on this, like, gets us nowhere as parents. So what should we focus on instead? You know, for those parents who, you know, might be going to, you know, give a lecture to their teenager, like, how can we stop and maybe think about what we're going to say a bit differently?
Yeah, it's, of course, so hard to stop because we were handed patterns from our parents. And they were handed these patterns. And when there's not that other path laid out perfectly, or we haven't any practice in it, it can be hard to go, wait, I'm going to try something else. So I just want to honor how tricky that is and how sacred this role and this time is. And it's natural that it's going to feel uncomfortable and maybe even wrong at times, because it's when we realize our parents maybe could have done better, they did their best, but maybe didn't work for us. We have to almost forgive them in a way, and also mourn or grieve. And that can be a hard thing to do. So I just want to honor that. Speaking in practicality, parents can sit down if they want. One of my friends told me this once and I loved it. Her name's Kaylee Kukla. And she's like, when you sit down, it totally changes what's going on in the brain. Your brain can't be like, it's an emergency, run from the bear, with our old, you know, hunter-gatherer brains. If we're sitting, then it's like, okay, so put your feet in the earth, sit down. Anything that can ground you, throughout the day, even. It's harder in the moment if you're stressed and your teen is, you know, if you're faced with this. So do it as much as you can just for yourself anyway. And then in that moment, maybe remember and notice when you start to lecture, and you can just stop and go, oh my God, I'm starting to lecture you. I'm stopping. Teens appreciate this so much because it's candid, it's honest, it's authentic. They also see that you're maybe growing and shifting, and that's what they're ready for, is for you to listen more. 80-20 is a great sort of ratio if we want to look at, are you listening 80 or are you lecturing 80? You want to be listening more like 80% of the time.
So we want to be listening 80%, and then maybe the 20% of lecturing kind of goes down a bit better with our teen as well, right?
Yeah, of course. When we feel heard and seen, no matter how old we are, we're much more likely to be receptive to the wisdom or the insight that someone else has when it's when we give permission for that. You know, we can be like, hey, I have a couple thoughts. Do you want to know? If we even just offer that before just diving right in, we offer teens that control to choose. And another thing they really need at this stage and age is a sense of control, obviously within safety and age appropriateness, but that really goes hand in hand with the autonomy that they're starting to grow and really cultivate.
Yeah, so true. And I love that. Like asking them, because they're probably going to say, yeah, I want to hear your thoughts, because then they're going to be intrigued, right? Rather than just kind of diving straight in. Okay.
And if they say no, then it's also okay. Cause then you can be like, no problem. I'll keep listening, or let's make some food. Right. And it's not the right time. And that's good to know that.
Yeah. So do you have any practical tips on, you know, how we really do listen, how we really can listen to our teens?
I think one of the most important pieces of this is actually learning to really listen to ourselves. And I say this because so many of us were indoctrinated, whether it be in school or society or specific people, to steer away from that inner knowing. You know, if we think about a child daydreaming in class about things they love, like an instrument or maybe a painting or anything. It could be anything that they love that they're working on or are interested in. And a teacher, no offense to teachers, but because of the way schools are set up, often it's like, hey, pay attention, come back here. Happens in the home too. Oh no, get that done first. Or no, we don't have time for that. And, or you're fine, right? And instead of really being like, oh, what's that like for you? Oh yeah, you wish you could be doing this instead, or oh, you're sad right now, right? We often sort of override culturally, and maybe even as parents sometimes, what's really going on for that kid. It doesn't mean they're going to know that you have to agree or it's even something that's true all the time, because everything with kids is pretty fleeting, and that's okay, good. They're moving it through, right? Those feelings, it's like they come and go like clouds. But I would say really, what's your inner voice saying? What's going on within you? What's hard for you? What's scary for you? What's big for you? Maybe find support with learning how to do this, because it is something we all kind of have to relearn because we unlearned it.
Yes.
And so yes, that's so one true thing parents can do before, you know, and then maybe that'll feel so good and you'll want to do that more for your teen. You'll really see how beneficial this can feel.
Yeah, and it does. It was like when I'm talking to parenting experts and that sort of thing, it often always comes back to the work on ourselves, doesn't it?
Yeah. We're creating the reality that we're in. Of course, nothing's completely in our control, but we do get to choose our perspective. We get to choose what's most important to us. Teens are in this really special place where they're really cracked open because they're experiencing like four times the emotions that they did when they were little, and they're much more complex, and they actually practice feeling them. That's why I say go into these moments when they're complaining. They're in real life asking you to guide them through how to feel these big feelings. They're not going to say that, but that's what's happening because that's what's natural. And that's the natural unfolding of this stage and age. We have to hold space for and trust that there is a natural unfolding. And as much as we can just be a witness to it and allow, while keeping them safe, of course, but encouraging them to learn how to keep themselves safe too.
Yeah. And that's such a good way of looking at it, you know, that they're practicing feeling those emotions. Such a tweak on the way we can look at things. And yeah, like looking at our own triggers is huge. I recently, because one thing that triggers me, I walk into my daughter's bedroom and she's got her blinds shut and she's sitting there in the dark and it's a nice sunny day. And I like, you know, march over to the blinds and open them and open the window and say, let the light in, let the fresh air in. And it always leads to an argument between the two of us because, you know, that's, you know, I'm walking into her space. So I said, I brought this up with her a few weeks ago and she said, yeah, I really wish you wouldn't do that when you walk into my room. I said, okay, I'm going to make a really big effort not to do it. and it's just, you know, the interaction between us when I'm walking into her bedroom has like dramatically improved since just stopping that. And that was my trigger, you know, I don't want you sitting here in the dark and the, you know, without any fresh air when the weather's so nice outside. So yeah, it's looking at the, you know, the things that are triggering us, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I can completely understand that. I am a total sun worshiper and we know the magic of sunshine and how important it is for us. And so it can be worrisome to see your teen in the dark. It can be like, oh no, of course you're going to feel like crap if you're sitting in the dark, all these things. And so that perspective shift of like, yeah, a lot of this is phases. And not that we would want to say that to a teen, but a lot of it is trying stuff on, feeling their way through feelings. And what you're thinking is probably so different than what she's thinking. And just that little, you showed her that you listened to her and you made a different choice. And now what I tend to see is when we can meet teens and that is then all of a sudden they'll start like opening their blinds on their own because you've allowed all this space for her to be in the darkness.
Exactly. That's exactly what I've found. And a few times I've caught myself out, you know, going to open the blinds and then I'll say to her, oh, I'm not supposed to be doing that. Am I like the blind, you can be in charge of your blinds in your room. And just one, you know, it's just such a simple little thing, but it really has made a big difference.
Teens are so, from my experience, which is like thousands of teens at this point for decades now, so forgiving and so open when we can really just meet them where they're at.
Yeah.
Even if it's under the covers in a dark room when it's sunny out and it's like, oh, life sucks right now, huh?
Yeah, exactly. And maybe that's her mood right now and that's okay. She doesn't have to be in a good mood just because the sun's out, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. So, you know, sometimes when we're seeing our teens make, you know, bad decisions or decisions that we feel are wrong, it can be, you know, we can get in the trick of sort of blaming them and it can be a challenge to sort of zoom out. But I know that you talk a lot about looking at the environment rather than blaming the teen. So can you talk more about that to us?
Absolutely. So, you know, one of the best examples is probably school right now for so many, right? It's like, I hate school, or maybe your child is having a hard time at school or even failing school. And sometimes it's very easy to go, there's probably something wrong here, or my kid's not trying, my kid's lazy. And then, oh my gosh, and they're going to be on my couch when they're 45, right? That's just like immediately goes to this horrible worst case scenario or never going to graduate. You might be even getting the memos from school that your child isn't paying attention or that they don't seem to care. They're not motivated. And I think the reframe is really like, yeah, how come that's not working for your kid? What are they learning about? What's the dynamic with the teacher like? What's the classroom setting like? Are they, because we know in our bones, we need sunshine. We need movement. We need people of different ages to interact with. We need to take safe risks. We need to make mistakes. We need to fall down. We need to have multiple safe people to sort of mentor us through life. And the classroom is not offering any of this. That's an actual environment thing. And teachers are doing their absolute best within a really tricky system. And last time I was in a school was 10 years ago as a therapist. And now I just do coaching, not therapy. But I know that even then, 10 years ago, it was really rough for a lot of teens to feel heard and seen in their experience of what they were going through, right? Whether it be a hard morning at home, they're sleep deprived. That's another kind of environmental thing right now that we're seeing. Most teens are completely sleep deprived. And that looks like laziness, but it's actually their brain is not getting enough sleep for what it's doing and how much it's growing. And so that's another environment we can look to. And what's natural? What's most natural in the stage? Looking to, if it's like that quote, right, about the flower blooming. If it's not blooming, we don't blame the flower. We look to the environment. What need isn't being met? What passion isn't being supported? And now we have media kind of telling teens and what path and what place to be in and what group to be in, instead of, again, that like inner knowing. It's like when your kid is little, and they were really like, a lot of us kind of knew our thing when we were little, or at least we were open enough to we were playing with all kinds of different things, building, drawing, singing. And then we find our place. Some of us know it really young, and then we get kind of like learned out of it. So I always look to what's missing, right? What is that need that's not being met or valued or honored? Does your kid need to actually be the leader in the class? Are they more of a listener? Do they need more group stuff? Do they need actually to be more solo for quiet if they're more introverted?
Yeah. And we could say the same for home as well, couldn't we? You know, like in terms of, yeah, the you know, if we're feeling like their behavior is off at home. And I know, you know, we're in a bit of a cycle like this at the moment. You know, get up and get out of bed a bit earlier, or, you know, my kids used to be real early risers. And again, this is a big trigger for my husband and I. We're up and walking the dog and doing things in the morning. And now we're in summer school holidays here in Australia, and they're, you know, we're dragging them out of bed at 10 a.m. And then they need, you know, a couple of hours to wake up and have breakfast. And so it's midday before they're sort of, you know, getting going. But yeah, so just when you were talking then, I'm like, okay, what do we need to change in the environment? But this is fairly normal for teens as well, isn't it? This kind of, their sleep cycles really change.
Absolutely. And we never look at a baby and go, oh, that baby's so lazy. It could be like waking up now. It's been napping for too long. But we do this with teenagers, culturally speaking, right? In our societies, we're like shaming them for this need to rest. And if I went to a high school right now, I don't think I'd make it a week without being completely moody, totally irritable, and like, I'm done with homework. There's for so many reasons. And so I'm amazed if when I look at teens and what they kind of deal with in the day, which is basically doing a lot of stuff they don't want to do all the time, that plus what's happening if we could magic school bus into their brain and see what was actually happening and how it's doing all of this with half the sleep they need, or two-thirds really is more of what it's like, we would just be shocked.
Yeah.
And almost just like amazed, I think. Yeah. Because their circadian rhythm is very, very different, actually. Just like I was saying with babies, we need very specific sleep in that stage and age, and every baby is different. And then very specific sleep in the teen years, 9 to 10 hours is best. And most teens aren't getting that. My friends wrote Sleepless Generation. It's a great book, and it was written actually a few years ago. It's probably even more true now. I'm sure they'd love to talk with you about this because it's real. And then, of course, you as the parent are like, how do I motivate my kid to get up? And they're just sleeping all the time, and then they play video games. And it's like, well, of course, if the work is uninspiring, if the work doesn't feel relevant, if they don't feel connected to the material or the teacher or themselves, and then they're not getting sleep, oh my gosh. Yeah. Of course, they're going to take every chance they can to sleep in.
Yeah. Yeah, so true. And yeah. And that, you know, they don't want to go to bed early. You know, so they're, yeah, going to bed late. So they really probably, you know, do need that sleep until 10 a.m. some days. And the whole school system is not kind of, you know, like designed for teens and the way their brains work either, is it?
Not at all. No, it was developed, at least in this country, in the Civil War era. It was like all of a sudden dads were in factories, and then they're like, okay, now kids are going to go to school to train for this. I mean, we know this. You can look this up on the internet. The real history of school has nothing to do with child development. And I remember studying to be a teacher at one point, and I knew I had to stop after a year. I'm like, this is not going to be good. I don't fit in this box. This doesn't seem like anything to do with what's appropriate for this stage of development. It really is not designed to support it. And that's why we're seeing, I think, so much stress right now. I mean, the kids are not okay in a lot of places. It's just really hard. And even if your kid is a type A super achiever, they're still compounding so much into every day, and they're sleep deprived. And the human body, as we know, can't hold on to everything forever.
Yeah.
It has
to just keep going and going and going. Yeah. Yeah, that's so true. We're really lucky. My son's at a trade school because he's been very interested in, you know, doing, like, he's very hands-on. And so, one of our local schools offers a trade program. So they do sort of, you know, the minimal kind of academic work that is needed for them to finish high school. And they do lots with their hands. So they're starting in their trade of choice, whether that's carpentry or electricity or whatever. So yeah, he's just thriving there. But I really don't think he would be coping at a mainstream school for the reasons that you've talked about.
Yeah, I mean, in all children, and definitely boys in particular, they're meant to be moving things, building things. Mm-hmm. All of us in different ways, of course, but it is such an amazing time for boys to be physical and in good ways and really age appropriate ways and beneficial ways. And also for anyone, this is such a time of let's open this door and see what's going on in there. And let's gain practice and maybe mastery in this skill that I'm interested in. And so that's so beautiful that you guys have that option. It's way more appropriate for what makes sense and what we know about the stage and age for it to be a following one's path and also just being more active. I mean, there's so much sitting. Doesn't work for us humans. We're made to move.
Yeah. And that's what happens in the later years of high school, at least, you know, it's more sitting and less moving, you know, a lot of kids don't do any sort of physical education at all, depending on what sort of paths they are going down. So yeah, it just doesn't make sense, does it?
No, I was talking with a friend recently about, I don't know if you've heard of Agile Learning Centers. They used to have a different name. They've popped up all around this country and for decades now. And we were talking about even positive peer pressure that can happen. It's a really beautiful way of learning, similar to a trade school. It's really like similar to Montessori. You're kind of following your passion. And there's really specific things they do. It's beautiful. But this topic of positive peer pressure was kind of great because it's when you're around people that are sparked and lit up and stuff, you too want to feel that and follow that. And especially when it's authentic and truly integrated and real, there's nothing that can really replace that. And so when a group of kids, you know, are all around each other, having a great time and learning what they love, it's contagious.
Yeah, definitely. So for anyone listening, if you know your kids are struggling at school, just knowing that there are alternatives out there, obviously depending on where you live, but yeah, highly recommend looking at some alternatives and not sort of just sticking with mainstream school if it's not working for your team.
Absolutely. And even if, I love to add this, because even if there's no other option, for whatever reason, your family does not have other options, there's so much beauty in listening to how hard it is for your teen, going back to what we've started with. Even if you can't change anything, be with them in how hard it is, because there is nothing worse than feeling alone when things are hard, especially for a child, right? It's like painful, truly painful. And so if you can't change anything for whatever reason, or you haven't found the way to change something yet, the environment, then be that environment that they need. Be right with them along the way. And also ask your school, is there an option here for this class? Can it be online? Is there an option for no homework? Because sometimes there is, and they won't tell you till you ask.
Yes. Keep asking the questions. And I love that. Just keep listening rather than, well, you know, the comments that sometimes, you know, automatically come out of us because of the way we've been parented. Well, you're lucky to be able to get an education, mate, or, you know, things like that. But sometimes, you know, sometimes we say and are not helpful at all when a teen's going through hard times.
Absolutely. Because a teen hears, and part of my job is translating for parents what your teen is actually saying with the eye rolls and their words. What that teen, and, you know, vice versa, but what the teen hears in that is, I don't care that it's hard for you and I don't have time to listen. And you should be grateful no matter what. Your experience doesn't matter. Even though you're not saying that, that's what they hear.
That's what they hear.
Yes. And then we wonder why then they don't share, right? Then they close up. well, this isn't a safe space to share how hard things are for me or what I don't like. And it's a really missed opportunity, because when we listen to what people don't like, we learn about what they love. If we can really listen and be present.
Oh, love that. So many. I'm going to have to listen to this episode over and over again, because I do have one more question before we finish up. So I'd love, because that, you know, the teenage years can be filled with a lot of conflict. And, you know, really, I think most of us parents really just want to feel more connected to our teens, and our teens want to feel more connected to us as well. So can you share some practical tips on how we can move from that dynamic of conflict to more connection with our teens?
Yeah, I think we've covered some of it already. And so I can sort of piggyback a little bit. The listening, do the work. If there is a trigger, that's for us. It's like a gift for us to find that treasure. And I would also say, it's not about no conflict, like having no conflict ever. It's even a reframe of, okay, conflict, what is this? Oh, like, we're not seeing this the same way. We haven't found the common ground with this. Or my teen feels very passionate about this, or right, like not liking school or something, for example, or really loving soccer. You know, this is this type of stuff. And so we can, but if it's about something like chores, I've seen such magic in those moments of conflict where you're just like, ah, oh my gosh, I can't believe you won't just do this thing. Do it with them. Or collapse on the couch next to them and be like, I wish we never had to do chores ever. Like going into that and allowing space for their experience. And then they can go, yeah, it's so stupid. And then you might be like, let's do it together. And then, you know, and then whatever. And then you kind of talk about the next thing you'll do. And maybe it's something that they'll actually enjoy. I find so much magic, like we were saying before, when we can meet them where they are, there's almost this exhale. Like it's okay that I hate taking out the trash. My mom's not mad at me for that. I can breathe again. And actually, I'm more open to doing it. And especially if she'll do it with me. And then utilize that moment that could have been a huge blowout to model self-regulation, engage them in co-regulation, and then show them how to do the chore. Of course, they likely know how to take out the trash. But at the same time, some teens actually don't have that much practice with it. And they are tired. And so even just having your company might be a massive shift in your dynamic. Yes. And also the ability to just get that thing done.
Yeah. And then you can use it as an opportunity to spend time with them, because, absolutely, you know, we all need more of that with our teens.
Yeah. Who,
yeah. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. So, most parents say that to me. They're like, oh, I wish I could see my team. Or great. So do these things with them. Be right, yes, there by their side. Yes. Instead of that a hammer coming down on them, another sort of authoritative voice that's just chipping away at their joy. Like, and I don't mean be passive or permissive. That's not at all what I'm saying. You're still the adult and the guide. As your relationship strengthens, their desire to follow and be part of your family community totally shifts, or at least can totally shift.
Yes, beautiful. Oh, so many great tips. And it's just reassuring to have this conversation with you, for me personally, but I'm sure all of our listeners will really enjoy this conversation as well, whether they have teenagers or whether they're heading into those teenage years. So can you tell our listeners a bit more about what you offer and where they can find you online?
Absolutely. So I offer coaching for parents and teens, sometimes whole family, depending on the dynamics. And you can find me at kirstenkobe.com, or that's my handle. So feel free to reach out, send me messages. I try to reply to every comment and message. And also, if anyone wants, I'm still offering, as long as I possibly can, this free 30-minute call, one per family. If people just want to just feel that, have that experience, sometimes a half an hour can be really enlightening and feel really, really good. So that's why I still offer those.
Amazing. Well, we will pop the links in the show notes so that people can find all of that really easily. Thank you so much for having this conversation with me today, Kirsten.
Thank you for having me. I always love seeing you. It's just wonderful to be here.
So great to chat. See you later.
Thank you so much for joining me on the podcast today. head on over to our website, naturalsuperkids.com, for the show notes for this episode, as well as a whole heap of inspiration to help you raise healthy and happy kids. I'll see you next week.